above her stood the great bull buffalo.
So now here I was. They were great for painting windows, but they weren't that nice for running away from dogs.
She isn't looking at the street, or the houses, or even the people passing by. She's looking up at the sky.
We love stories!
It's time for the Appleseed, filled with stories for you and your family. Stories to warm your heart, lift your spirit, and give flight to your imagination. And we love bringing them to you. And it's such a pleasure for us every time that you tune in and bring these stories into your home and into your heart. We've got some great ones for you today. And before we get to it, we want to remind you that you can find us online at byuradio.org/appleseed. There's an archive there filled with stories for you and your family, stories many of which will already be favorites and many of which will become favorites as you listen to them. We love to hear from you. You can send us an email at theappleseed@byu.edu. So if any of the stories that we bring you spark memories or thoughts or stories for you, certainly we encourage you to share those with the ones that you love around the kitchen table or the living room. That kind of storytelling can make for memories that last a lifetime. And of course, we invite you to share them with us too. You can send an email again to theappleseed@byu.edu. Well, now, today, we're going to start with a story called Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar, a hilarious tall tale of extreme proportions from the West Virginia storyteller Bill Lepp. A little later on, we're going to hear a story called The Buffalo's Wife, told for you by the wonderful musical storyteller Odds Bodkin, who tells tales from all over the world. And this one is a retelling of a Blackfoot Native American myth about a very brave young woman. And you'll get to hear an original tale by the wonderful storyteller and songwriter Bill Harley, a piece called Strawberry Peach Sky. And we know that you're going to find that story to be as delicious as it sounds like it is. And we'll wrap it up with a retelling of the old story of the Little Red Hen. You know that tale, but you may never have heard it quite like Willie Claflin and his pal Maynard Moose tell it. You won't want to miss a single story. It's all coming up today on the Appleseed. And to introduce us to the first story that we're going to hear today, I'm pleased to be joined in the studio by Samantha Daines, one of our assistant producers. Samantha, great to
be here.
And we're going to listen to a Bill Lepp story that, yeah. I mean, almost enough said right there, right? In terms of just the mayhem that will ensue over the next few minutes, right? Tell us a little bit about, this story is called Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar, right?
Yeah, I was immediately attracted to this story just because of the title. I was like, When do I get to listen to this story? When do I get to pitch this story for an episode? Because it just has such a ridiculous title. It's kind of fun. I remember getting called, you know, a liar sometimes by my siblings or whatever. You know, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Sure.
But he twists it around.
That's right.
Which is, of course, a play on the fact that he is a tall tale teller, and so a lot of what he tells is a lie. And there's a fire in this story, and it's just really funny.
You know, one of the things that we know about Bill Lepp, because he's told it to us, is that sometimes he'll Bill has a pretty meticulous writing process.
Oh, really?
Know? Yeah. A lot of storytellers will just kind of think of a story and let it kind of gestate for a long time in their brain and then sort of open their mouth and tell it, you know, and do a lot of sort of mental work on a story. But Bill does a lot of work on paper. Writes out every word, looks at it very carefully, and plans a story in that way. And one of the things that he told us is that he'll sometimes create an entire story just to say one phrase.
Yeah.
And that's the case with this tale, Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar. And it's a great story. You're going to love it. You're on the Appleseed.
I was out in my backyard a couple weeks ago. I was chasing these wild dogs. We have this pack of wild dogs in our neighborhood. There's about five or six of them. Unless you're actually a bag of garbage, the dogs aren't much of a threat to you. But nobody likes to have wild dogs in their neighborhood, and we've called the pound, we've called the Humane Society, we've called everybody we could think of to come and try and take care of this dog problem. But nobody has done anything about it, so me and my neighbors have just sort of instituted a policy. When we see these dogs, we chase them out of our yards back into the woods by throwing whatever's handy at the dogs, be it, you know, cranberries or apples or rocks. We're not trying to hurt the dogs. We're just trying to de-acclimate them from coming into our yard. So the other day I was out there running across my backyard throwing rocks at these five wild dogs. Well, there's about maybe a 50-yard field between the back of my house and the woods that I was chasing these dogs toward. And I got about halfway across that field with the dogs maybe 10 or 20 yards in front of me when a strange thing happened. The six of us, myself and the five dogs, all of a sudden collectively ran out of the mathless vortex that we had been living in for a few minutes, because suddenly all six of us realized that five is four greater than one. And that five should be chasing one. And so those dogs just sort of lifted off the ground, turned around as a unit, and started heading back toward me. Well, now I had to turn around and start running as fast as I could to get back to my house. And I was running as fast as I could, but, you know, it's difficult to run when you're on a set of 12-foot stilts. And, oh, did I not mention the stilts? Right. See, I was painting the second-story windows in my house. And if you've ever painted the windows on the second story, you know it's kind of a hassle, because you have to get out the extension ladder, you have to put it up, you have to get it in the right place by the window where you can reach everything, you have to adjust the ladder and get it level, and then you go up there and scrape and paint the window. Then you got to come down and move the ladder over to the next window, and it just takes a lot of time to mess with the ladder. So I thought, what if I had a pair of house painting stilts? Then I could just stand in front of the window, do everything I need to it, and just kind of step over to the next window. So I had gone down to my garage and gotten two 12-foot 2x4s and nailed some boards to them, some little pieces of wood, so I'd have something to stand on. I put a bunch of eye hooks in them so I could hang things like my paint brushes and my scrapers and a thermos and a lunchbox and some paint cans so I wouldn't have to come down very often. So now here I was. They were great for painting windows, but they weren't that nice for running away from dogs. So here I was running as fast as I could across the backyard. My plan was to get to the house, go to one of the second-story windows, lean the stilts against the house, and climb in the window. And just as I was really putting this plan together, forming this plan solidly in my mind, that's when I put my right stilt into one of the prairie dog holes in my backyard. Oh, did I not mention the prairie dogs? Right. Now, you know as well as I do that prairie dogs are not indigenous to the great state of West Virginia. But one of the neighbor kids down the street, about the same time that he discovered eBay, he discovered his parents' credit card number. And he had purchased a set of breeding prairie dogs before anybody knew what was happening. And they did as advertised. And what his parents found out was that you can't flush a prairie dog in the same way that you could a goldfish or something like that. So they just started throwing these prairie dogs out the window, and pretty soon we had just a whole prairie dog town in that field behind my house. And so I put my right stilt down into one of those prairie dog holes, and then I put my left stilt down into another prairie dog hole. And the one thing I had going for me on the stilts before I stepped in those holes was that I was 12 feet above the dogs, and I didn't think they could get to me. Now, I was only about 4 feet above the dogs, but I still didn't want to just jump and run, so I grabbed those stilts as hard as I could, and I just sort of started to hop on those stilts, trying to hop myself, build up enough momentum to hop myself out of those prairie dog holes. Well, I got going up and down pretty good, and just before those wild dogs got to me, I built up enough steam and I came shooting up out of those prairie dog holes. But apparently, while I had been hopping up and down like that, I had created some sort of vacuum in those prairie dog holes, because following me out of each hole were about 250 prairie dogs just erupting out of the holes like foam from a champagne bottle. And I started running, and apparently those prairie dogs are sort of had a hornet or a bee mentality, because they swarmed me also. So now I was being chased by 500 prairie dogs and five wild dogs. And you know as well as I do that dogs and prairie dogs aren't related any deeper on the taxonomic chart than phylum. But they had decided they were all coming together. So now I'm running as fast as I could, still on the stilts. I was almost to the house. I came around the corner of the house, and that's when I stuck my right stilt into the fire that I had going there. Now, see, I had that fire because we had some friends who were coming over later, and they were from Hungary, and so I thought I would cook them a traditional Hungarian meal. So I'd gone on the internet and gotten a recipe for authentic Hungarian goulash, and so it said you had to cook it on an open fire, so I was cooking that on an open fire. I mean, I was going to be outside anyway, so I could keep my eye on the fire, and as I came around the corner of the house, I stuck my right stilt in that fire while the stilt burst into flame. As you have to understand, these were not OSHA-certified house painting stilts. OSHA isn't really known for its creativity and forward thinking and new stilt technology. Had they been OSHA certified stilts, they would have been fiberglass, they would have been shockproof, they would have been some sort of asbestos fireproof thing so that there was no way they could have caught on fire. But these weren't. These were wooden 2x4 stilts. And I didn't know if the whole thing was going to work, so I hadn't gotten the two best 2x4s I had in my garage. I got two old 2x4s that were really dry and had a lot of rosin and sap soaking out of them. So when I stuck my stilt into that fire, it burst into flames almost immediately. Well, now the flames were creeping up. I still had the 500 prairie dogs and the 5 wild dogs hot on my tail, but now I couldn't lean my stilts against the house and climb in the window because I didn't want to burn the house down. Didn't want to have to explain that to my wife. And so I went around the front of the house and started down the stairs. Now, it wasn't easy to go down the stairs on those burning stilts, but I made it to the bottom of the stairs, and when I hit the street, the Shriners were out there. Did I mention the Shriners? Okay, gotta explain this. My neighbor is a Shriner, and he's the guy that's in charge of choreographing all of the neat little things they do at parades with those little carts and tiny motorcycles and lawnmowers and that sort of thing. He and his buddies were out there choreographing a particularly difficult roller skating event that they were going to use in the upcoming Arbor Day parade. So as I came down, they saw me burning with all the dogs after me, and they sort of scattered and left some of their equipment laying in the street. Well, I stuck that right burning stilt right into an errant roller skate, and I started to roll down the hill. Now, the hill in front of my house isn't that steep, but it is long, and I was gaining speed quickly, and my left stilt was suddenly jerked out from away from me because, you see, I had gotten up there and realized that I was expecting a phone call, and I didn't want to take the house phone with me, so I thought I'd just take my cell phone with me up on those stilts, and then I realized the battery was low, so I had taken a 500-foot extension cord and plugged that into an outlet, plugged my phone in, hung it on one of those hooks, and just kind of wrapped the cord around my stilt. So apparently I had just come to the end of that 500 feet, and that stilt was jerked out from behind me there, and I was cruising down the hill with the 5 wild dogs and the 500 prairie dogs still in pursuit. But at that point, my main focus was putting that fire out, because it was getting closer and closer and closer. And normally in this sort of situation, I would reach in my pocket and pull out my stainless steel 74 function Swiss Army type knife. I would open up something like the fire hose or the fire extinguisher. I'd put those flames out. Everything would be fine. The only problem was I wasn't wearing any pants. I know I failed to mention that. I was hoping to avoid it, but obviously it's necessary for the story. I wasn't wearing any pants. I was wearing my boxer shorts, but I wasn't wearing any pants because when I got up there to the second story window on those house painting stilts, I realized I was wearing my brand new jeans. And I have been married long enough to know not to paint in my brand new jeans. It only took me 4 or 5 pair of jeans to learn that rule. So I didn't want to climb down again because it's difficult to get up and down on the stilt. So I was on the back of the house. Nobody was going to see me. I took off my jeans and put them in the window. So I was painting in my boxer shorts, but I really needed to put that fire out. And I got to tell you that my neighbors were lined up and down the street. The Shriners especially were staring at me with a mixed expression on their face of sort of awe and jealousy all rolled into one, like maybe they were going to use this for their parade. But my neighbors were all shouting, "Fire, fire, pants on, liar." But I wanted to get that fire out, so I reached in my boxer shorts because I had to get the fire out, and I pulled out my I pulled out my stainless steel 74 function Swiss Army knife because, as it turns out, you know, I'm an Eagle Scout, so I like to be prepared. So I had sewn a special pocket inside all of my boxer shorts for my knife just in case this sort of situation arose. So I pulled out the knife and I got ready to open up the fire hose, but that's when I remembered that it had been a particularly cold winter and I had turned the water off to my pocket knife during the winter because, you know, you don't want a burst pocket knife in your pocket. And so I hadn't remembered to turn the water back on. So what I did was I thought fast, and I opened up the little fairy tale book, and I turned to the story about Jack and Jill, and I got Jack's bucket just before he tumbled down the hill, and I dumped that water down that stilt. That put the fire out. But I was still in trouble. I wasn't out of the woods yet because I still had the dogs chasing me. I was still rolling downhill, and I wanted to jump. But at that speed, from that height, I figured I'd do myself a lot of harm if I tried to jump off that stilt. So I figured I'd lower the stilt. And so I started to carve the top of the stilt down, down, down. And it's not as easy as you might think to carve the stilt that you were riding on downhill in a roller skate. But I got it down. I got it down low enough where I thought I could jump. And I was forming a plan to get myself out of this. It was a simple plan. I thought I could get away with it if I timed it just right. All I needed was 4 rolls of toilet paper, an old Raggedy Ann doll, a phonograph machine, 3 electronic voting machines, and a video game. But I thought if I could pull all that together just at the right moment, I could escape these dogs. And I was about to test my plan when I went by the city park. And it just so happened that right then in the city park, having their annual convention, was the Union of Dog Catchers and Prey Dog Catchers and Dog Catchers and Prey Dog Catchers Apprentices Local C-584. They were having their annual event, and when I came by, boy, they just hopped right up and went out and cleared up all those dogs and all those prey dogs, lickety-split. And I went back home, and everything probably would have been all right, except that on the way home, I got a ticket for lewd roller skating. And also for the improper burning of construction material. And also for having un-OSHA certified house painting stilts. And so, what did I mention? That's the end.
A recording made live before a very entertained audience. That was Bill Lepp with a story called Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar. It's been a pleasure to sit and listen to this story with you and with our assistant producer, Samantha Danes. Samantha, there it is.
There's Bill Lepp running around on stilts, and the stilts are on fire. It's just so ridiculous.
I know we talked about this before, but Bill talks about the key to a tall tale, right, being this notion that it starts out in a way that's completely plausible. And finally, of course, it unfolds to the completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the key is presenting a story that leaves the audience wondering at what point it crossed the line, right?
Yeah, and I love how much, like, detail there is and how, like, meticulous, like, oh, yeah, I was painting my house and then there were these prairie dogs. It's like, right. Wait, what? What? It's fun.
It's always a pleasure to hear a Bill Lepp story and a pleasure to have you with us to hear it. And, of course, there's a lot more coming up here on the Appleseed. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's such a pleasure for me to have you with us for this hour of The Appleseed, filled with stories like the story that you just heard a moment ago. If you're just joining us, of course, that story was called Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar, a story told for you by the great West Virginia tall tale teller, Bill Lepp. Coming up, you're going to hear a story from Odds Bodkin called The Buffalo's Wife, and you'll hear a story that will be for you as delicious as it sounds like it's going to be, a story called Strawberry Peach Sky from the great storyteller and songwriter Bill Harley. We'll hear from Willie Claflin coming up in just a little bit, too, with a version of The Little Red Hen that you'll enjoy, told by Willie Claflin and his storytelling companion, the puppet Moose, Maynard Moose, recorded live at the National Storytelling Festival. But first, how about a conversation with a friend? Stories come into our lives in so many ways, from families passing them along, telling to telling, from the pages of great books, from radio and podcasts, through the terrific songs we love, and the things we see on screen, and even through the making and sharing of great food together. And exploring all of the ways that great stories get into our hearts and minds is part of what we love here on The Appleseed. And I'm joined in studio by our producer, Jeff Simpson. And, you know, Jeff loves to talk about food. I'm just telling you. He'll be the first to admit it. Right, Jeff?
Absolutely. And I am so excited to talk to you about food today, and specifically about baked goods.
Yeah, yeah.
Growing up in my household, I was, I don't know that I was known as the best baker. I think what my family discovered was I really liked to bake, and they really liked not to bake, but still reap the benefits. And so they always told me, this is my theory anyway, they always told me that I was the best baker in the house. I don't know if that's true, but a couple of nicknames they gave me were Jeffrey Crocker, obviously.
Jeffrey Crocker. Sounds like a founding father almost, you know.
And then alternatively, Jeff Boyardee. Yes. So those
I wasn't ready for that one. That one got me.
And one of the things that I loved to make most were cookies. Mm. And I would use them often to try to woo girls of my age into, you know, going on dates with me or to at least like me or pay attention to me, right?
Wow.
And one of the cookies that I love to make, of course, everybody's favorite chocolate chip cookie, right?
Mm, yes.
And this particular recipe called for about 3.5 cups of flour, which is a lot of flour. And my mother would keep her flour and her sugar in these big round jars that you often see bulk candy put into these jars, right?
Yeah.
And so she would have these scoops that you would take and scoop them into the big Bosch mixer. And so I went to one of the jars and started scooping out what I thought was white flour.
Oh, no.
And so I go through the whole process. I put in all the eggs and the vanilla and the sugars and the butter. And I bake it at whatever temperature I was supposed to bake them at. And I let them cool off a little bit. And as I'm putting them in my mouth to taste them, I notice that for some reason, these chocolate chip cookies are sticking to the roof of my mouth. And I go back to the cupboard and I take a closer look at what I thought was the white flour. And I ask my mom to come into the kitchen. She says, "That's not white flour. That is powdered milk." I had just put 3.5 cups of powdered milk into this recipe. And my sweet dad, I don't know if he was just being nice or if he genuinely, this was his opinion, that these cookies tasted just fine. They were good. But yeah, if you make cookies with powdered milk, they're going to stick to the roof of your mouth.
And it didn't, you know, sometimes you stumble into a recipe that becomes a family favorite, but it doesn't sound like that one got repeated.
The recipe was not duplicated, but I have the story.
You know, my mom, as you tell that story, it makes me think of my mom, my wonderful mom, who was a terrific cook, who is a terrific cook. And when I was a kid, my mom would make things, and every once in a while she would leave a key ingredient out or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
She'd serve us the food anyway and say, today we're having something missing pancakes, or today we're having something missing.
Yeah.
And we something missing whatever was a tradition at our house.
Yeah.
And we would have to pick out the thing that mom had left out of the recipe on accident.
Those are some of the best experiences that you have in the kitchen is when you really want to make something delicious and you don't realize until you've already started the process that you're missing probably 3 to 5 of the ingredients that you need. And so you start looking up online, okay, what's a substitute for garlic or what's a substitute for lemon juice? And then other times you just get creative and say, you know what, I don't even think there is a substitute for that. So we're just either going to omit that altogether or let's throw in this other ingredient and see where it takes us, right?
The strange concoctions that come out of the kitchen of Jeff Boyardee. I can't tell you how much I love that. I think that's so great.
And you know what else is interesting, Sam, is that you can't beat yourself up too much when you have these mishaps in the kitchen, especially when you think about all of the failures that go into making some of the greatest recipes and dishes ever concocted, right? People had to fail probably 100 times before they came across something that was amazing.
Oh, that's right.
All the experimentation, all of the, you know, the mishaps where you're burning something or you're not getting the cooking time just right. So a lot of failure goes into this. You shouldn't beat yourself up.
That's true. You know, when I was a kid, my mom had on the shelf a copy of the famous Tassajara bread book, kind of one of the canonic Bibles of bread baking, right? And in the introduction to the Tassajara bread book, the guy who wrote that book says, you know, if you burn your bread or if your bread has some other fatal flaw, you know, it's not that you did it wrong. It's just that's just the way you did it this time.
I love that.
And so we have often quoted that to each other as something has come across the stove that's not exactly how we thought it would turn out.
You know, I have yet to make a loaf of bread. I've always wanted to, especially a loaf of sourdough bread. So why don't I go fail 100 times? Then I'll come back and we'll do another and one with, of these on my bread
with
experience.
With 100 more stories,
yes.
Right? Well, what a pleasure to have had Jeff Simpson talking with us about powdered milk chocolate chip cookies that stick to the roof of your mouth. We always hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with the people that you love. And stories that take place in the kitchen are so often some of the most adventurous, some of the most exciting, some of the greatest stories that we know. We hope that even now in your mind are coming stories that stories of adventures in the kitchen. Pleasure to have you, Jeff. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Ah, great stories come into our lives in so many ways, and it's such a pleasure to chat with Jeff Simpson, our producer, about a food memory. You know, food memories can be the triggers for stories that are a delight to share with the people that you love around the kitchen table or the living room. We hope that the stories that we bring you here on the show spark memories for you that you can share with those people. And, of course, we hope you share them with us. You can write them down. Send us an email at theappleseed@byu.edu. There's a lot coming up on the Appleseed. Up next, we're going to hear a story from Odds Bodkin, the wonderful musical storyteller who tells stories from all over the world. This one will be a Blackfoot Native American myth about a very brave young woman. You won't want to miss a word. I'm Sam Payne.
You're listening to The Appleseed. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to The Appleseed. Here's Sam Payne.
It's such a pleasure to be with you on this hour of The Appleseed. If you're just joining us, at the top of the hour, we heard a story called Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar, a story told for you by the great West Virginia storyteller Bill Lepp, a story we suspect that he composed in its entirety just so he could get to say the sentence, Fire, Fire, Pants on Liar. And of course, we had a great conversation about a food memory, powder milk cookies, with Jeff Simpson, our producer. It's always a pleasure to chat with a friend, and Jeff's a good one. We'll have him back, of course. And coming up now, we've got a story from Odds Bodkin. This is a story called The Buffalo's Wife. It's a retelling of a Blackfoot Native American myth, a tale of a brave young woman and the trials that she endured in order to help protect her family and her people. Now, of course, you don't see many of them now. There was a time when the buffalo were plentiful, and in terms of importance to the people of the land, there was no animal that held greater honor or before which the people were more reverent than the buffalo. And in this story, a young woman makes a deal with one of those powerful buffalo. Here's the buffalo's wife on the Appleseed.
Upon the great plains, where the Blackfoot people lived, where the buffalo lived by the millions, there were cliffs. It was the way of the buffalo people to charge over the edge of the cliffs, to break their backs, to be cut apart, to feed the people. One day, famine came to the plains. For some reason, the people could not fathom. The buffalo stayed far away from the cliffs. Starvation and disease came to the people. All their tricks they tried. The buffalo would go nowhere near the cliffs. At the edge of the plains, a young girl of the village walked. She put her hand above her eyes and looked far off. There, like the shadows of clouds, black upon the plains, the buffalo. She had seen much suffering in her village, and so she spoke. If one of you, if any of you would just come to the edge of the cliff and feed my people, I would marry one of you. Suddenly, across the plains, the herd charged. Over the cliff, many of the buffalo fell, breaking their backs. Rejoicing, the people ran from the camp. They cut the meat. They feasted. They were saved. The girl was returning down into the valley when suddenly there beside her, towering above her, stood the great bull buffalo, chief of the people. And he spoke to her.
You now will become my wife. You promised.
I do not want to become your wife.
You promised, and you will become my wife.
She knew. She must go. Out into the herd, she followed him. Disappeared. After the people had butchered the meat, the girl's father worried for her, searched about the valley for her, could not find her, climbed to the top of the cliffs, looked out across the herds, could see nothing. Then he saw Magpie.
Magpie, Magpie, your wings are swift. Magpie, fly out across the buffalo. Find a woman among them.
Magpie lifted up into the air upon his wings and flew out across the herd. Magpie far below saw the millions upon millions of buffalo's backs and the dust and the roaring. And then down in the center of the herd, beside a great bull buffalo, he saw a woman. Magpie flew back and landed beside her father.
My daughter. My daughter is in the herd. With the great chief of the buffalo. Yes, yes.
Quietly, afraid, her father crept out to the edge of the herd. Near was a great wallow, full of wet mud. He crouched there and called to the magpie.
Magpie, magpie, go find my daughter. Tell her I am here.
Magpie flew off above the herd and fluttered down beside the girl. Beside her. Her husband slumbered.
My father. Is it the wallow? It is dangerous for him. Wait, wait. Husband. Husband.
The chief of the buffalo gave her one of his horns. She ran through the herd toward the wallow. There she found her father crouched, hiding.
Father, father, you must go.
Daughter, daughter, come back. You must come back.
Father, they will kill you here.
Daughter, come back. Come back. We will run. We will run.
Father, you cannot run fast enough. Please, go away.
I will not leave you.
Go away. Wait. I will try to return.
She filled the horn with water and ran back through the herd and ran to her husband. He sniffed her. Suddenly, all the bulls around him leapt to their hoofs and thundered across toward the wallow.
There, there, there.
They found her father, and he could not run fast enough. But in there to the wallow, they trampled him, their hoofs cutting him to small pieces. Until they left him dead. No piece of him smaller. No piece of him bigger than a moment.
Wife, who was that? Who was the man?
He was my father. If, husband, I can bring him back to life. Will you agree that my magic is strong?
If you can bring him back to life again, I will agree. Your medicine is stronger medicine than ours.
The girl called to Magpie.
Magpie! Go! Go to the wallow! Find a piece of my father! Bring him!
Magpie flew to the wallow, pecked in among the mud, soft mud. He pushed it with his beak, dug down, found something small and white. It was a piece of backbone. In his beak, he put the backbone. Magpie flew and landed beside the girl, beside her husband, the buffalo.
Thank you.
The girl put the backbone upon the ground and covered it with her robe, looked at the four corners of the earth. and began to sing. She lifted the robe. There was the skeleton of her father. She replaced the robe and sang again. She lifted the robe. There was the body of her father, still dead. She placed the robe over him. The girl lifted the robe. There, her father lay alive and breathing. He stood. All about them, the great buffalo were agitated and kicked up dust. But her husband looked at her and said,
"Your medicine is strong. I will keep my word. You may go and return to your people. But before you go, I and my people will show you a dance. Each time you wish us to come to the edge of the cliff, so that you may have meat and eat our bodies, you must do this dance."
A slow dance the great buffaloes began to do. The father holding his daughter looked. They returned to their village. Since that day, the Blackfoot people have done the buffalo's dance to call the spirit of the buffalo to the edges of the cliffs so that they might fall, break their backs, and give meat.
Odds Bodkin with The Buffalo's Wife on the Appleseed. Up next, a story called Strawberry Peach Sky from the Grammy-winning storyteller and songwriter Bill Harley. It's from a collection called The Town Around the Bend. And there's a lot of joy to be found in this next tale, the story of a young girl and her ability to see the impossible where many other people couldn't. Here's Bill Harley with Strawberry Peach Sky. Sounds delicious, doesn't it? Well, you're going to find this story delicious in a lot of ways. Here it is on the Appleseed.
Down the street from me in the town around the bend, there's a girl I know. I walk around the block 6 times a day. It's one of the things I do. Very often, while I'm walking around the block, thinking about what I should do next, the girl is on the front step of her house. Her name is Pigwhistle. She isn't looking at the street, or the houses, or even the people passing by. She's looking up at the sky. She never looks at me. I walk by and say, "Hi, Pigwhistle," and she says, "Hi." But she never looks at me, just keeps looking up at the sky. Well, that kind of thing is enough to drive you crazy if you are already a little bit of a nutbag. So one day, as I was walking by, I stopped. "Hello, Pigwhistle," I said in a voice loud enough for her to hear. "Hello," she said, but she didn't look at me. So I walked a little closer. "Hello, Pigwhistle," I said. "Hello," she said back, but she still didn't look at me. Finally, I got very close to her, only inches from her ear, and I said, "Hello, Pigwhistle. Hello," she said back. But still she didn't look at me. She just kept looking up in the sky. "Pigwhistle," I said, "why don't you look at me?" Because I'm looking at the sky, she said. I can see that, I said. But why are you looking at the sky? Because I'm waiting, she said. For what, I asked. I'm waiting for the sky to turn to strawberries, she said. Strawberries, I said. And peaches, she answered. Strawberries and peaches both together. Then, my fine bag of bolts and screws, I said, you are going to wait a very long time because the sky will never turn to strawberries and peaches. Yes, it will, she said. No, it won't, I answered. Yes, it will. No, it won't, I said, wondering how long this would go on. Yes, it will, she said. You just have to be willing to wait long enough. And so I gave up first and shook my head and headed down the street. Goodbye, I said. Goodbye, Pig Whistle said. But she was not looking at me. She was still looking up at the sky. And I was very worried about Pig Whistle and other children like her that do things that don't make any sense, waiting for things to happen that won't, no matter how long they wait. And now I am telling you my face has gone very red from what happened, because the other day I was walking down the street and who should I come across but Pig Whistle sitting on her front step staring at the sky. Hello, Pig Whistle, I said, not even sure if she would answer me and quite sure she wouldn't look at me. Hello, she said, and she smiled. She did not look at me, but she smiled. And when I saw her smile, I got curious, because it seemed very much like an I told you so smile, which is very different from a ha 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 smile or I have a quarter in my pocket smile. And so I walked over and sat down on the step by her, and I whispered in her ear, how are you? I'm fine, she said. But she did not look at me, and she just kept smiling. Are you waiting for the sky to turn to strawberries and peaches? I asked. No, I am not, she said. But she did not look at me, and she just kept smiling. So, I said, finally you have given up on that happening. No, I did not give up, she answered. Then if you haven't given up, why are you not waiting for the sky to turn to strawberry and peaches? I asked. Because, she said, the sky is strawberry and peaches, silly. I don't think so, I said. The sky is never strawberry and peaches. It is now, she said. And then I looked at the sky. The sun had just set, and right where the sun had set, the sky had turned a bright red, the color of very ripe strawberries, and mixed in with the red were fluffy clouds in the shape and color of peaches. It looked like dessert at the end of the day. Oh, I said, I guess you were right. I knew I was right, she said. Some things just take a while. You're right, Pig Whistle, I said. Especially strawberry peach skies, she said. You are right again, Pig Whistle, I said. And I promised myself to wait a little longer for the things I really want.
Strawberry Peach Sky, told for you by Bill Harley here on the Appleseed. And our last tale this hour is a tale you've likely heard before, but maybe not in exactly this way. It's the good old story of the Little Red Hen, told for you by Willie Claflin and by his storytelling companion, the moose puppet Maynard Moose, recorded live at the National Storytelling Festival. Here's Willie and Maynard with the Little Red Hen.
I would like to tell one more story that communicates traditional moose values and has moral at the end for to improve our behaviors. This is called the Little Red Hen. Once upon a time, there was a little red hen. She had three friends, one was a doggy, one was a goose, honk, and the third was a cow, moo. Well, one day the little red hen was gazing up at the beautiful clouds in the sky and looking at the songbirds go twerp cheeple and wondering why, oh, why can't I, when all of a sudden... When all of a sudden she saw some grains of wheat. That was because one eye was on the right-hand side of her head and the other eye was on the left-hand side of her head, and every time she looked at the sky, she saw the ground at the same time. This is why chickens need to learn their right from their left early in life. Otherwise, you wind up looking for worms in the clouds. By the way, her name was Eponymous, but they called her the Little Red Hen for short. Well, she called to her friends. Hey, you guys, I found some grains of wheat. Who wants to help me plant the wheat? We can grow some wheat and make some bread. It will be yummy. Who wants to help, huh? I can't possibly help, say the doggy. I'm so far behind at work. I'm 2 or 3 months behind. I'm so stressed out, I don't even have time to eat. I would like to help you, say the goose, but I have a terrible case of gastroindignation. I think there is something terminally wrong with me, and I have to go to the veterinarian, and off you go. I ain't gonna help, say the cow. I got a date with a cute moose. And off she go, gudump, gudump, gudump. Very well, say the little red hen, then I will do it myself. So she plant the wheat, and sun and moon, time passes, and the rain shine, and the sun falls. And pretty soon, the wheat grow nice and tall. It is ready for to be harvested. Hey, you guys, say the hen, who wants to help me harvest the wheat? Take it down to the mill for to be ground into flour. How can you even ask me, say the doggy? You know how stressed I am at work. I'm working double overtime. I'm never getting my project done. I don't even have time to chase my tail. And off he go. I would like to help you, say the goose, but I have ballistical disorderations with my middle ear. I do not know up from sideways. I'm afraid there is something terminally wrong with me. I have to go to the veterinarian and see. And off she waddle. I ain't gonna help, say the cow. I gonna go dancing with my cute moose. And off she go, gudump, gudump. Very well, say little red hen, then I will do it myself. And she'll see harvest the wheat and take it down to the mill and get it all grinded up into flour. Then she bring it home, get ready for to bake the bread. Hey, you guys, say little red hen, who wants to help me bake the bread? How can you keep asking me, say the doggy? You know how totally stressed out I am? I don't even have time to drool. And off he go. I would like to help you, say the goose, but I have a pain in my left wing and my beak keeps falling asleep, but I'm afraid there is something terribly wrong with me. I gotta go to the veterinarian. Not me, say the cow. I gonna go to the piney woods and chase busterflies with my cute moose. Gudump, gudump, and off she go. Very well, say the little red hen, then I will do it myself. So she baked bread. And after a little while, 4 beautiful smelling loaves of bread sat in the windowsill. Hey, you guys, say little red hen, who wants to help me eat the bread? I will, say the doggy. I got my project all done and I'm ready for vacation. Me too, say the goose. I have discovered Dr. Gander's herbal tincture. And now I am wellness personified. I will help you too, say the cow, and I brought my cute moose. Can we have 2 extra pieces? He have a big appetite. Hi there, say the moose. I got big appetites. Well, say the little red hen, you think you'd like some bread, do you? Well, when I found the grains of wheat, would anybody help me plant the wheat? No, I had to do it myself. And when I harvested the wheat and took it down to the mill to be grounded into flour, would any of you guys help me? No, I had to do it myself. And when it was time to bake the bread, would any of you guys help me? No, I had to do it myself. So you want some bread, do you? Well, nyah, 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 you don't get any. I go and eat it all myself. And she eat all 4 loaves of bread. Blugs, you do not feel so good. Gee, say the doggy, I only offered to eat some to be polite. I myself like mysterious meat byproducts in a petroleum-based sauce. Actually, say the cow, the moose and I gonna get married. We gonna eat a big chocolate cake afterwards. We would have spoiled our appetite. Thank you. And off they go. Say the goose, I do not think you should have eaten all that bread. Dr. Gander says that a carbo overload can seriously unballast your system. You are going to need a thorough cleansing after that. And after eating 4 loaves of bread, well, you will tend towards obesity and heart disease. Well, bye. I'm off to Dr. Gander's wellness weekend and purge retreat. And off you go. And they all lived happily for never afterwards, and the little red hen sat there with 4 loaves of bread stuffed in her tummy, not feeling good at all. And the moral of the story? If you set out to teach your friends a lesson, you just might teach yourself a lesson instead. So take a lesson from the little red hen, avoid carbo overload. Thank you for your detention. Thank you, Maynard. Thank you.
Maynard Moose with a Mother Moose tale, The Little Red Hen. Now, you know that story, but it's always fun to hear a version of it in the mouth of the storytelling companion of the great Bay Area storyteller, Willie Claflin. Willie Claflin lived for so many years in Maine, now lives on the West Coast, but remains a favorite all over the country. And together with his companion, Maynard Moose, and other companions as well, he delights audiences young and old. There's a lot more coming up on the next hour of The Appleseed. We hope you'll join us online at byuradio.org/appleseed, an archive of episodes there filled with stories for you and your family. And, of course, you can download the BYU Radio app to find all of the programs produced by BYU Radio. The Appleseed is pleased and proud to be part of that family of programs. This hour was written by Samantha Daines. Our audio engineer is Carly Robison. Our producer, Jeff Simpson. I'm Sam Payne, and I can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for an hour of stories, music, and conversation made for you and your family and brought to you by The Appleseed. The show is a production of BYU Radio. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Sam. Just one more thing before we go. There's so much produced by BYU Radio that you're sure to enjoy, including Treasure Island 2020, the swashbuckling time-traveling pirate podcast in 10 parts. You can find it by Googling it. We'll see you next time.